challenge. Say, Tyrone, tell me something. Why do you people always drink orange soda? What's wrong with Coke? The members of Mario's group are slumped in their seats. Kelly looks confused, and if I didn't know him, I'd think it was an honest question. But I do know him. So does Tiny. I had about enough of you, white trash, he yells. Kelly shrugs. I'm just stating a fact. Orange turns you people's tongues a funny color. Your butt's gonna be a funny color. You don't zip your lip. Mario comes in saying, what did I tell you about racial slurs, Kelly? And Kelly shuts up. I slip into the seat by Leo's, but he doesn't acknowledge me. I don't care. All week I've dreaded what Mario calls family day. I'm planning to say I live with Uncle Henry and Aunt Em and our dog Toto. Scary thing is, people here would believe me. Mario consults his class list. Everyone here? I ain't, Kelly says. Mario crosses a name from the list, saying, Xavier's no longer with us. Where's X-Man? Tiny says, cracking his knuckles. County jail for violating his restraining order, Mario shakes his head. Let that serve as a cautionary tale for you boys. Mario lets that sink in. Then he pulls a chair up to the circle, turns it backward, and sits. Today we'll be talking about families, our parents in particular. What's that got to do with anything, I ask. All part of a generational cycle, Mario says. What happens at home's the cornerstone of your other relationships. So if your daddy beats on you, you'll hit your own kids? Kelly asks. I look at him and he curls his lip. I turn away. Not necessarily, Mario says, but it's a risk factor you have to understand and deal with. Then before anyone can use any stall tactics, he says, now, who's first? Silence. All eyes on Mario. Usually, when he asks a question, someone will jump in just to get it over with. But knowing one another makes it both easier and harder to talk. And no one's touching this one, especially after what Mario has said about generational cycles. Mario's eyes roll across the circle like a roulette ball. Finally, he stops. He picks his victim. Nick, you live at home. What's your family like? I shrug, feeling my skin tighten around my forehead. All right, I guess. That's descriptive. I try. Try harder. Tell me about your father. He's my hero, I say, then try to swallow. A self-made man living the American dream. I'm quoting one of my father's speeches. Next comes the part about how he came from Greece at 16 and learned English reading the Miami Herald. What's he do? He's an investment banker. Those are the sharks, the guys who buy the companies in trouble then sell them off. Impressive. He must work hard. Mario walks toward me. He ever get stressed out? He's fine, I say, squirming. We get along great. What about when he gets mad? Everyone gets mad sometimes. What's he do then? Not much. Yells sometimes, doesn't everyone? Around the circle, others nod, except Leo, who stares out the window. Do they know I'm lying? A fine relationship, Mario smiles, walking behind me and putting his hands on my chair back. How's he show he loves you, Nick? My stomach tightens, and I remember a long-ago Dolphins game with some lawyer and the lawyer's son. My father bought me a jersey, even high-fived when the Finns scored an overtime field goal. For months after, I'd slept in that shirt. We never went again. I say to Mario, we're not into that touchy-feely crap. Sorry to hear that, he says, touching my shoulder. Feels good, sometimes, knowing someone cares. I shrug his hand away. Make you nervous talking about your family? When I don't answer, he says, no one makes fun of anyone here, Nick. What about your mother? I stare ahead. That's easy. I haven't seen her since I was 5. I lean back in my chair. Someone else should talk now. Mario nods, and there's another silence. Beside me, Leo's gaze hasn't left the window. Then Kelly breaks the stillness, pointing at me. My family's about the same as rich boys, I reckon, except my daddy ain't no Mr. Gottbuck's banker. He pulls a sinewy hand through his hair. He raises me and my sisters, though. Got a temper, but we get along most of the time. And the rest of the time, I ask before I realize my lips have moved. Are other people's fathers like mine? Like I said, he's got a temper. Don't hit us or nothing. Mostly just put down, stuff like that. Don't hurt anyone, none. Not once you build up that scar tissue, Mario says, and Kelly nods. That's about right, I guess. Poor babies, Ray, the older guy, says beside me. Their daddies put them down. Watch it, Ray, Mario says. No personal attacks. But that's what's wrong with this country, right there. He points a finger at Kelly. Children rule the house because their parents won't raise a hand, just withhold TV or put them in the corner. You got it, baby, Kelly says. America, love it or leave it. Don't you burn my flag, you commie Cuban. Ray says, I'm from America, too, just not your fast-food Disney World America. My parents came here on a raft. Papa broke his back in the fields, leaving me to be a man from when I was 7. When he was away, I got into 2 shares of trouble, but when he came back, he whipped us all into shape, including Mama. That's what kids need. Discipline. What I see in this room sickens me. He stops. Below, the train roars by, and I want to protest the injustice of what Ray said, but I don't. No one does, and I wonder if it's because Ray's life is as familiar to them as to me. No way to tell. Beside me, Leo is silent, but his eyes are dark. Tiny and AJ speak now, AJ saying his father's an all right guy. His mother's a doormat. To my surprise, Tiny admits being sexually abused by his mother's boyfriend. Through it all, Leo remains motionless, teeth parted, until I wonder if he's sleeping. Finally, he's the only one left. Mario nods at him. Will he refuse? He often does, saying he doesn't have to talk. But now his black eyes seek Ray, and he speaks like the rest of us aren't here. I'm one of those kids you talked about, policeman. Ray flinches when Leo calls him that, and I know why. Ray never told us what he did. Looks pretty bad for a cop to be in a class like this. I live in the Grove, the good part. Drive a nice car, go to a private school, so I've got it made, according to you. And you're right about one thing, policeman. No one lays a hand on me. Ray's eyes could melt glass. Leo doesn't look away. You think you know who I am? Leo demands. My mother married Hector when I was 3, telling us what a good man he was. From the beginning, I heard screaming, lying in bed at night. By the time he started hitting her in front of us, there were 2 more kids, a Mercedes, and my brother and me at Wentworth Academy. Felix and I were twins. He was a few minutes older, but I was bigger, so I was in charge. We shared a room and had a secret language we used in school until they put us in separate classes. Even so, when Felix broke his finger playing ball, my own hand hurt so bad I couldn't write. We weren't identical, though. I looked like my mother. Felix had our father's blue eyes. My mind wanders to Tom, and suddenly I ache for a brother. Beside me, Leo's still talking. Hector had it in for Felix. He used to take me and my half-brother and sister to get McDonald's or whatever, but he'd leave Felix home. I tried to stay home too, but Felix would say, go ahead, I'll just get reamed if you don't. So I'd bring him back whatever I got, candy or toys from birthday parties. One time, I brought back ice cream. It melted, chocolate all over Hector's leather seats. Hector sprung a leak then, screaming, you little bastard, you did this for your shit brother? He drags me to our room. My brother's making a model car, and Hector says, hit him. No, I said, but Hector's by my ear, screaming, you weakling, you turd, I will smash him worse if you don't. And finally, my fist moved without me. I blacked my brother's eye. This is such crap, Ray yells in my ear. He's making this up as he goes along. Leo starts toward him, but Mario says, simmer down, Ray. He holds up his hand, and when Ray sits, Mario says to Leo, go ahead. Leo sits, and I watch him. That was when we were 9. After that, Hector knew how to hurt us. Hector wanted me to like him, but I hated him because of Felix. So if Felix did something wrong, Hector made me beat him up. Or sometimes he made Felix hit me, and he'd scream, don't let him beat you, fight back, little girl, like I was his prized rooster. And finally, I hated Felix because he got me in trouble. I stopped playing with him, stopped bringing things home, wouldn't even talk to him at school. I had my own friends. The violence stopped then. Hector had what he wanted. But when we were 12, Felix swallowed a bottle of pills. My mother took him to the doctor and they made him puke. Sent him home like nothing happened. By then, I hadn't spoken to my twin brother in over 1 year. Leo stops, running a hand across dry eyes. And Mario says, you okay to go on? You don't have to. I'm fine, Leo says. I don't want to push you. Mario says. You aren't, Leo says. I'm fine. Leo continues, his voice even, like reciting the multiplication table. The day Hector and I were supposed to be partners at his father-son picnic at work, I woke up, feeling sicker than I'd ever felt. 10 minutes later, I look out the bathroom window over the driveway. There's a police car outside. The doorbell rings, and I go downstairs, stand behind Mama. Leo jabs a finger at Ray. She's talking to one of your kind. He tells her my brother's dead, like he was asking for donations to the police athletic league. I ran back upstairs. I knew Felix was there, but when I got in our room, his bed was made. Even his bear, the brown teddy bear he'd hidden from Hector, was sitting on top of his turned-down blue sheet. He made the bed and walked to the train station. That one right there. Leo gestures toward the window, and we all look out at the elevated train. He pushes his knees forward and rests his elbows on them, looking at us as if he expects us to speak. There's nothing to say. Outside, the train roars by. I watch it, listening to the background music of Leo's voice. At the funeral, I saw my mother pretend to cry, her friends pretending to comfort her. The priest prayed God would spare Felix's soul, and people shook their heads because he'd committed such a grievous sin. I hated them. I hated the ones who sympathized, and I hated the ones who judged. Mostly, though, I hated Felix for being weak. I hoped Father Michael was wrong about his soul being saved. Leo stands and walks to Ray, eyes burning. Ray looks away. So, that's how spoiled I am, policeman. And you're right. My parents never hit me. We're all silent a moment, hearing the hum of fluorescent lights. Finally, Mario starts to talk, pulling together what we've said, how it affects our other relationships. I want to listen, but I can't stop thinking about Leo's story, even though what Mario says applies to me. Finally, Mario closes his notebook, saying he hopes we'll think about what we discussed. Then he dismisses us. I'm almost out the door when I hear Leo say, Nessa and I have a date tonight. With any luck, this will be my last day here. I hope it's not, Mario replies. That's quite a tale you told. I'd imagine someone with a story like that has a lot of anger stored up. I turn in time to see Leo smile. Do I look angry? You are angry, Mario says. Only reason you told that story is because you were angry with Ray. You need this group, even if you won't admit it. Well, I'll go on needing it, Leo replies, starting to walk away. Mario stops him. My Uncle Gustavo used to say, if you're halfway across the lake, it's just as easy to swim forward as swim back. Don't say, Leo turns. Tell Uncle Gus I hitched a ride to shore. The following week, Leo isn't there. The Journal. Caitlin hadn't been too hot for me to meet her mother, and one look told me why. Tom and I knocked on the McCourt's pink door, which we'd found by walking up the pink hallway past the pink plastic flamingos, and before you could say acrylic nail, a woman was on us like an obese kid on the last Twinkie. While Caitlin tried to ease us out the door, her mother gushed about how she'd been longing to meet us, then demanded, "Which one of you adorable creatures is Nick?" "Guess that's me," I said. It should have been pretty obvious since I was holding Kat's hand. Caitlin was squeezing the life out of mine. Kat's mom looked like Kat, but younger. No, really. Her makeup wasn't to hide age. It was like a whole new face, including painted-in eyelashes. Ripe grapefruit halves peered from a purple crop top while a denim miniskirt exposed tan legs. A father with a shotgun would have been less threatening. A Doberman would have been less threatening. No such luck. Mrs. McCourt's eyes dissected me, checking off clothes, watch, Nikes, before smiling. Caitlin said you were handsome, and she was right. Thanks, I think. Done with me, Mrs. McCourt turned her ample searchlights on Tom. And you must be Lacey Carter's boy, she squeezed Tom's biceps. Your mother and I have spoken extensively about my giving makeovers at the club. Caitlin said, we have to go, Mother. Mrs. McCourt told Caitlin not to embarrass her. She moved still closer to Tom, and Caitlin tried to get between them. Mrs. McCourt gave Tom's arm another squeeze. Besides, it's not often we have male visitors. Boys haven't exactly been rioting on your front lawn, have they, Caitlin? Finally, Tom mumbled something about needing to pick up his date, and we got away. Getting into the car, I noticed something around Caitlin's neck, a silver bead chain with charms, trendy and stupid. I fingered it, leaning across the seat to look. Did your mom give you that? I asked. Her mom was embarrassing, and so was the necklace. What's that supposed to mean? Just doesn't look like something you'd wear. She touched it. I got it in the Grove with Peyton. I think it's cute. You think wrong, I said. It doesn't go with what you're wearing, and it's totally blue collar, and makes your neck look too short for your body, too. Caitlin didn't move. Take it off, I said. Nick, Tom's voice from the back seat. What? I slammed my arm down on the backrest and faced him. What is your particular problem? I turned back to Caitlin. I said, take that stupid thing off. It's all right, Tom. Caitlin removed the necklace and held it up. Maybe it doesn't work with this outfit. Peyton chose it. Last thing you need is to dress like Peyton, I said. Cat hung the chain around the stick shift. We drove a block before I plucked it off and threw it out the window. Cheap metal hit pavement with barely a clink. I put my arm around Cat. She moved away. I pulled her closer. Don't you want to be close to me? That's what love is all about. Caitlin didn't respond, but she didn't shy away. February 23. Hallway behind the Fruitopia machine. The roses are white, veins of green through their petals, a plastic vial of water attached to each stem. I glance over my shoulder, then turn the dial on Caitlin's lock. 4-34-0. Same as always. It gives way. In the empty hallway, I study the contents. Books crammed in, a card from Liana. A stuffed bear straddles Caitlin's history text. Behind me, something clicks. I turn. Just the clock. It's 5 minutes into first period. I lay the bouquet across Caitlin's books, close the door soundlessly, and set the lock to zero. Happy birthday, kitty cat. Later that day. It wasn't like I'd never screwed up with Caitlin before. I had. But before, I'd always been able to get her back. I just had to keep trying. The journal. The evening had been a bad one. Caitlin had barely spoken to me since I threw her necklace out the window. She'd whispered with Liana, laughed at Tom's dumb jokes, and ignored me. I could tell she couldn't wait to get home, but I couldn't take her there. If I took her home now, it would be over for sure. Out of ideas, I dropped Tom and Liana off, then pulled into my own driveway. I walked around and threw open Caitlin's door. She didn't move. Take me home, Nick. My curfew's... I know when it is. Just stay 15 minutes, okay? Caitlin's eyes searched my face, the car, the deserted street, and I saw anger replaced by resignation. She'd go. I grabbed her hand and pulled her from her seat and down the gravel path before she could change her mind. The iron gate behind my father's house was painted white each spring, but it was October and the metal was weathered by sea spray, heavy with paint-covered rust. I pulled it. The latch creaked open. Our feet met cold, dry sand. I slipped off my shoes and motioned to Caitlin to do the same. Again, she begged me to take her home. I could hear tears in her voice. 15 minutes, I repeated. I was lying, but it didn't matter. She'd either forgive me everything or hate me forever. Please, Caitlin. Caitlin sighed and threw her sandals by the gate. I tried to take her hand. She pulled it away, but followed me down the shelly slope until we reached the shore. There were never many stars there, but the light bleed from downtown lit our way. I led her to an outcropping of rocks by the seawall, away from the main beach. I pointed at the water and whispered to her to watch. I waited. Ahead was nothing but black water. Caitlin started to look away, but I pointed again. Finally, a dorsal fin emerged, a bottlenose, a tail flipping through surf. Then another. Two dolphins played in the night ocean. They disappeared and surfaced again. I nudged her. Worth it? She ignored me, staring straight ahead for another few minutes. I was freaking. This was all I could give her, all I had, all I was. If she couldn't understand why I brought her here, it was over. Over. But finally, curiosity took hold, and she said, "How did you know they'd be here?" I told her they always were. I'd first seen them when I was 8. I leaned back on the sand, trying to figure out the best way to tell the story so she'd know what it meant. Finally, I said, "I was camping out, lying here almost asleep, when I saw a dark shape behind these rocks. At first, I didn't know what it was. Then it moved, and I saw it was a man. Big guy, maybe 6 feet tall, hair all around his shoulders. A homeless person, I figured. He demanded to know who I was, what I was doing here. I tried to sound brave when I wasn't. I told him my name and that this was my house. He laughed. He said I didn't act like it was my house. In fact, it was his house. I snuck a look at Caitlin. She was listening. Interested. Good. He came closer, I said. His voice sounded rusty, like he hadn't said a word in years. He told me how he'd built the house in 1925. You were nowhere to be found, my boy. A Johnny-come-lately, I'd call you. Or an intruder, he pointed to the water. Why, that dolphin's been here longer than you have. I started to smart off, saying there were no dolphins around except at the seaquarium. But before I could finish, one leaped through the air like someone had held up a fish. I stared at it, then him. I asked him how he'd done that. He whispered, "She knows me. Showed up after the big hurricane of 26. He told me his name.